Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning, everybody out there. Welcome. It's another show of Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. I am your host, Emily Rowell, with Peachtree Offices, and we have a great studio here today, a full lineup. Good morning, Rich. How are you this morning? Rich Casanova with Buckhead Business Radio X.
Check here. I feel like I'm in class all of a sudden. Yeah, here. We're doing a roll call. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a lot
of people. Oh, man, you have a great show this morning lined up. A great guest. We've been chatting before we went on the air. And also just a quick side note, welcome back from vacation. So you're still trying to get your sea
brain
legs back.
Working.
Yeah. So you were on the coast or what?
Yes, I was on the Gulf Coast.
Oh, I saw you said the golf
I meant
course.
I say Gulf Coast.
Oh, okay, yeah, nice. And so family and all, and lots of good food and downtime and R&R.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
So what was the highlight of the trip?
Laying on the beach.
Okay, yeah, nice.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a full show here today, so
yeah,
I'm going to go ahead and get started. I have Michael Friedman here with the Law Office of Michael Friedman. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you'll be talking about?
Workers' compensation.
Wonderful. And we also have Emily McBurney with Kegel McBurney, LLC.
Good morning.
And you'll be speaking about a little bit?
Quadros and the Division of Retirement Assets in Divorce Cases.
Awesome. And we have Nathan Hartman with Hartman Private Law. And you do estate planning, correct?
Correct.
Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
And Deborah Scott with Vining Financial Services. Thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you, Emily.
And you'll be talking a little bit about?
How I can support a variety of attorneys in their practices with clients.
Wonderful. And we have, last but not least, Michael Mobis.
That's correct.
Yeah. You've been Mobis practicing all morning this morning. Yeah.
And you will be speaking on?
I do workers' compensation law and veterans' disability law.
Fantastic. Well, we're glad to have everybody here. And to remind everybody of our sponsors this morning, we have 3A Law Practice Management, helping lawyers start and grow their practice. And we also have my company, Peachtree Offices. And we can help attorneys work virtually anywhere and get established in the Atlanta area. We also have an event that is actually tomorrow night.
Yeah, Wednesday the 10th, right?
Yep, it's at 191 Peachtree at the Commerce Club, and it starts, registration's at 5:30. It's called Nothing You've Ever Seen, the Hybrid Future of Lawyer Marketing, and it's going to be like a discussion with Randy Kessler and Alvaro Arauz with 3A Law Practice Management, and they'll be just talking about the future of marketing for attorneys and how it's kind of taken a turn. And
I mean, pretty much, if you're an attorney or lawyer, this is the place to be, the only place to be tomorrow night in Atlanta, right?
Absolutely.
And I'm not even an attorney, and I'll be there. It sounds like it's such a great event. I already got my ticket. And so the format is kind of some networking, but there's going to be a formal, like a panel discussion and Q&A.
Yeah, and it's on marketing any business. So it really could be for any business.
Really?
But it is because Alvaro works with attorneys and Randy Kessler is an attorney. It's actually going to be a discussion on the law practices and how they can market their business in this time.
And both those gentlemen have been on the show several times here in the studio. But as I know it, Randy's kind of a rock star in the legal profession, right? Yes.
Absolutely,
or yes?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, he's kind of the Richard Branson of for the legal profession here in Atlanta.
So you can actually register and get your ticket. I know there's discounts because the Young Lawyers Division of the Georgia Bar is sponsoring. So you can get your ticket. And if you're a member of that division, you can actually get a discount. And we have several sponsors, U.S. Legal Support. We have, I'm trying to think of the other sponsors.
Well, they're listed on the site as well. For, for tickets, how do they find out information?
So you can go to AtlantaLegalExperts.com or you can go to 3ALawManagement.com. Either way, and register for the event. There will be tickets at the door too, but we are running out of space. We're very close. Yeah. So if you want to be sure you get a ticket, I would do it today.
And talk about just meeting people in your profession all at one place. It's the place to be.
Yeah. Oh, and it ends with a happy hour.
Oh, well, that's... It starts with a happy hour or whatever, yeah.
Ends with a happy hour.
You're already putting a spin on things or whatever. Yeah, that's a good way to end an event.
Yeah.
All right, we'll hope to see everyone there tomorrow.
Absolutely. So let's get started. Let's start with Michael Friedman with the Law Office of Michael Friedman. We're so glad to have you here this morning.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
And I'll just go ahead and start with his bio. And You can also see all of the guests' bios on the website, atlantalegalexperts.com. Mr. Friedman is a solo practitioner. He represents people injured on the job in workers' compensation cases in Georgia. He has 22 years' experience. Before representing injured workers, he represented employers and their insurance companies, so he has unique insight into how the insurance companies handle their workers' compensation claims. Mr. Friedman uses that knowledge to the advantage of his clients. So how did you get into what you are doing today?
It was accidental. I did not go to law school to be a workers' comp attorney, but after clerking for a judge in South Georgia, I was offered the opportunity to come back here to work in an insurance defense firm, and I accepted the offer and went to work in their workers' comp department, and I've been there ever since.
Wonderful, wonderful. So tell me, what is the first thing an employee should do when he or she is injured on the job?
The very first thing employees should do is report their injury as soon as possible. Now, the law does allow them 30 days to report the accident, but the sooner the better. It just makes it easier for the insurance company to investigate the claim, and it's easier to get the benefit started the sooner you report it. And I should point out that being injured on the job does not mean you have to be injured in a specific accident. A lot of people have what we call repetitive use type injuries from typing or repetitive lifting, things like that. So when you first start having, when you first experience the pain and the problems from that, you should alert a superior or someone, a supervisor, to let them know you're having problems so they can document it. You may not need medical treatment right away, but at least they can document it. And then when it comes time to get medical treatment, they'll have something on file.
That's important.
Very important.
As soon as you start feeling something.
Yes.
It doesn't have, like you said, it doesn't have to be a catastrophe or a slip and fall, or it could be something that, you know, is required every day of you.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what would you do at that point? How would you go about getting medical treatment?
After you report the accident to your supervisor, every employer in Georgia is required by law to maintain a list of doctors. A minimum list would have 6 physicians on it, unaffiliated, at least 1 orthopedist, and no more than 2 industrial clinics. And your employer is supposed to allow you to choose a doctor from that list. If by chance the employer doesn't maintain a list, you can go to whatever doctor you choose, and the employer will be responsible for that. But to get medical treatment, you need to, you know, ask, and don't wait for your supervisor to offer it up.
Right.
Be proactive and ask for treatment.
So tell me a little bit about the indemnity disability benefits, and how could a worker actually obtain those?
Indemnity benefits are paid when you start losing time from work. Now, you do have to miss the 7 consecutive days before you start. Well, let me say it like this. You have to miss 7 days from work before you can be, there's a 7-day waiting period before benefits will start. So on the 8th day, if you're still unable to work, benefits should start at that time. And they're paid at 2/3 of the average of your earnings for the 13 weeks before the accident.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So can an injured worker recover benefits for pain and suffering?
That's a question I get from a lot of clients, and the answer is no. There is no recovery in Georgia workers' compensation for pain and suffering under any circumstances. A lot of clients will ask, well, what if the employer did this, did X, Y, and Z? The answer is still no. There is no recovery for pain and suffering in workers' compensation.
And when would they go about hiring a lawyer? Would they need to right away, or?
Ideally, yes. And the reason is because you have certain rights. The insurance company has certain rights, and the employer has certain rights. The employer or the insurance company knows what their rights are. Most injured workers don't know what their rights are. So ideally, you ought to hire an attorney from the beginning. The other side of that is when you do hire an attorney, it's going to cause friction with your employer. So you're walking a fine line. But it's never too early to hire an attorney in a workers' compensation case to make sure your rights are protected.
And how could you help them? How could an attorney like yourself help the injured worker?
I get a lot of calls from people who've been injured on the job, and they just want to know what their rights are. And I give them a free consultation.
Fantastic.
They can reach me at 404-425-6235. And if the problem is more serious, then I do suggest that they go ahead and retain an attorney. Mm-hmm. If it sounds like they're not getting the benefits to which they're entitled, or if it sounds like the insurance company is jerking them around, which is very usual. But if everything is going smoothly, I give them a road map of what they can expect, of what's likely going to happen.
That's fantastic. That's really helpful. And that kind of shows that, you know, you care about them and not exactly about, not only about making money. So you kind of help them first. And if they need you, they'll, the 99% of the time, I'm sure they go back to you.
Yes. Yeah, fortunately, yes. And that is true. It's, I'm not just in it for the money. I mean, obviously, I want to be paid, but right. That's not primary. I do want to be able to help people, and that's why I'm in this line of work. I'll add that the law does allow attorneys to collect 25% of income benefits that they get for their clients. I don't charge that. I don't charge that 25%. I get paid on settlements only.
Gotcha. That's different than a lot of other attorneys. So tell me, how do you get more clients? Like, do you have other attorneys that you work with, other businesses that you work with? Is it mostly from referrals from your clients?
It is mostly from referrals from other lawyers. This year I started my own website, which is mhfriedmanlaw.com. People can go there and read more about me and read more about workers' compensation law.
Okay.
Yeah, and from other lawyers, clients who have been satisfied with my services.
Wonderful. And where are you located?
I am in Dunwoody at 1854 Independence Square.
Now, do you service all of Atlanta or?
I service all of Atlanta, all of Fulton County, DeKalb. I don't have to run through all 158 counties, but the entire state.
Okay. Wonderful. So if you will, again, tell the folks that are listening how to reach you.
Sure. My number is 404-425-6235. It is always on. You can always leave a message if I don't pick up. And my website is mhfriedmanlaw.com. And you can also email me at mhf, that's Michael Henry Friedman, 312@gmail.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. And
thank
just
you.
To remind everybody, our sponsors are 3A Law Practice Management, helping lawyers start and grow their practice, and Peachtree Offices, helping attorneys work virtually anywhere. And we also have Atlanta's own John Marshall Law School that I didn't mention in the beginning. My apologies. They are also a sponsor. And we are on to our next guest, Emily McBurney with Kegel McBurney, LLC. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here this morning.
It's my pleasure.
And for more than a decade, Emily's law practice has primarily devoted to qualified domestic relations orders, which is QDROs, and other retirement benefit matters. Prior to forming Kegel McBurney in 2012, Emily was a shareholder at Atlanta law firm of Davis, Matthews, and Quigley, PC. She is a recognized expert in the field of QDROs and provides QDRO preparation and consultation services for clients across the country. She is a popular speaker and is frequently invited to lecture on the subject by legal and professional organizations nationwide. Emily has published numerous articles and contributed to various publications about QDROs. She also quotes a QDRO blog for the Huffington Post, and I'll let you give that later. And she graduated magna cum laude from Brown University with a BA in 1990 and was elected to Phi Beta Kappa. She received her law degree cum laude from Harvard Law School in 1995 and was raised in New Rochelle, New York.
Correct.
Wonderful. And there's a lot more I didn't read on the website.
Yeah, we'll post it on the website, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're obviously an expert in your field. How did you get into what you're doing today?
Oh, ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to be a QDRO expert. No, it's a long, long story. But at one point I was a children's book editor. Like, it's just not a linear path.
Sure.
But I fell into it. And it was the last thing that I wanted to do. I mean, I originally went into family law because I liked the human element and the sort of juicy stuff and family law. And then when this fell in my lap, I also don't like the technical. stuff. And sure. So then I was like, well, this sounds horrible. This is only technical. So I went into it kicking and screaming. But what's turned out is it's a lot more interesting than I thought. And the human element is really there. Like, I am helping people with something they absolutely cannot do without me. And it's really important to get it right. And to, you know, people going through a divorce are not at their best often, and it's a terrible time. And so I really do feel like I have that human element more than anything, even more than maybe when I was trying to do family law.
Or writing children's books.
Exactly. Although those,
actually, that's great.
Those writing skills really, the editing skills have really come in handy.
Oh, I bet. So explain a little bit about the QDRO and, you know,
absolutely,
to the foreigner that has no idea.
Absolutely. Like, I'm not really a hit at parties when people are like, well, what do you do? And so basically, when people are getting divorced, you can't just give someone half of your pension plan or your 401k. And you would think that there would be no need for my job, that people could just fill out a form and then, here, take half my 401k. But that's not how it works. There's a really complicated federal law that's called ERISA, which stands for the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. And since the 80s, the early 80s, there's a whole lot of federal protection for employees about their retirement benefits and them not being reachable by creditors and all sorts of things like that. But under the law, there is an exception to, like, no, a company can only pay retirement benefits to their employee. And so in order to have the company pay benefits to somebody else, there has to be this qualified domestic relations order, which is a very precise, highly technical document that has to be consistent with the federal law and also the very specific terms of each individual retirement plan. And so it's just an order that the divorce court has to issue that has to be approved by the employer, that says, as part of this divorce or as part of this child support action, it's any domestic relations action. It's not actually divorce, although like 99% of the time we're talking about a divorce.
Sure.
That allows this exception, both for tax purposes and for federal law purposes, the payment of retirement benefits to someone other than the worker who's earned them.
So the court issues it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when you step in.
Well, I write it and then...
Okay.
So... basically, most of the time I get contacted after the divorce is over and mm-hmm. someone's attorney has told them, like, you need to get this done and I don't know how to do this, so call Emily. But I prefer to be contacted during the divorce because there's so much stuff people don't understand about retirement benefits. Even really savvy financial people don't understand. And so a lot of times, you know, when I get hired and then I open up their settlement agreement, I have this terrible feeling because most of the time there's information that's not in there, or the people have agreed to do something that's not possible with this type of retirement plan, or they've mixed up what kind of plan they're talking about. And so I like to actually help write the settlement agreement so that I know all the information that I need is in there and that's going to make it go smoothly. Because these things can be torture. I mean, sometimes I get calls from attorneys that say, like, I've been trying to get this quadro done for a year. I keep getting it wrong. Can you just step in and finish it for me? So
right.
The earlier I can get in, the better. But so often I'm brought in to help with the negotiation between the parties because people don't understand what benefits they have and what can be done with them.
Sure.
And so, but so ultimately they reach an agreement, or God forbid they go to trial, and there's a divorce, and then I prepare the quadro. I usually get it pre-approved by the plan administrator, who's the entity at the employer that has to approve it, and then I get the parties to sign it, and then I send it into the judge, and then the judge executes it, and then I send it off to the plan administrator, and then there's some other steps that happen after that. But that's the basic. But so, again, the sooner the better, just because there's
right.
so many things that can get screwed up, and the earlier you can be nailing them. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been contacted by someone who their divorce has been over for a year, and they finally got around to it, and then it turns out their agreement calls for the division of a retirement asset that's not divisible.
Got it. So if that happens, then what do you do?
sometimes you're just stuck. Like, state and local government employees in Georgia, their retirement benefits are not divisible by law, a lot of them. So sometimes there's just, like, no good options. It also depends on the level of cooperation between the parties, because if you've got people who are just trying to make it right, there's usually a way to, you know, make the payment some other way or trade off some other asset. If the people are just high conflict and the other side says, you know, too bad, looks like you can't get the, you know, the half of my retirement I said you could have, then sometimes you have to go back to court.
Actually, that's what my question was.
Yeah. I mean, and that's never a good option, but sometimes that's what you have to do.
So if they're, what do they need to know, the people getting divorced, about dividing their retirement benefits? What's the general rule so that everybody will know to come get you?
The general rule, and this goes for their lawyers,
probably
too.
Probably no one rule. But.
Well, it's be informed. I mean, I can't tell you. And I mean, I'm guilty of it myself, but mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many people know absolutely nothing about what kind of retirement or deferred compensation benefits they have and how they work. And so, like, sometimes, you know, when a new client calls and I say, well, is it a 401k or a pension that's to be divided? And they have no idea. And those are really different things that right. call for a totally different kind of division. But also sometimes my clients are, you know, high-level business executives that have huge, you know, benefits in all kinds of forms, and they have absolutely no idea, like, how they work, what's divisible, what's not, what's to be paid in the future, what's guaranteed in the future, and what's not. There are some benefits that are not protected.
Wow.
And so it's really just be informed. And the more, I mean, I give a lot of presentations around the country, and I just always say, like, you know, you can pay now to find out this information, or you can pay a lot more later mm-hmm. If you don't take the time now in discovery and in just sort of your preliminaries with the divorce to just find out what's there and, you know, how it works.
Right. That's like such a common theme.
Yes.
As a former insurance professional, I used to say that, pay now or pay later.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally true. And sometimes, I mean, it kills me. People are paying thousands of dollars to clean something up that would have been very simple back at the time.
So I'm guessing, I mean, you did family law. So you kind of do you do both?
I did family law very, very briefly, and just as an associate at a law firm, and realized, like, oh, this actually is totally not what I thought it would be. Actually, I did a clerkship when Fulton County started its family law division back in the beginning of it, and I spent a year and a half or 2 years sitting in court watching all these divorce trials going and thinking, oh, this sounds great, I would love that. And then it turns out that's like watching TV. That's not at all what being a family law attorney is like. And so I quickly realized that wasn't for me. And so at that point is how this fell into my lap. But so I have always worked with divorce lawyers. All mm-hmm. of my referrals are usually divorce lawyers. My law partner, Kurt Cagle, is an excellent family law attorney. And every firm I've worked at is family law attorneys. So I know a lot about it, but you will never find me handling anything other than retirement assets.
So then one of the questions here is, can't the divorce lawyer just handle the QDRO? And you kind of explained earlier, but can you go into a little more detail of why they can't?
Sure. They can, and some of them do. The thing is, these are complicated, and they tend to – divorce lawyers, and I've seen this firsthand all my career, divorce lawyers have a lot of things blowing up all the time. There's mm-hmm. – people at the airport having a custody battle about who can take who out of the country, and there's, you know, emergency hearings and TROs and all kinds of stuff, and there's people crying on the phone about, you know, losing custody of their kids or not getting child support. This kind of stuff that I do can easily fall way into the background.
Sure.
And it the long time is not your friend with this. It can get worse as time goes on and it's not done. And it's also just, it's complicated and it's filled with traps for the unwary. And if you don't do it regularly and you're not on top of it, you can easily make a mistake. I mean, I have handled cases where someone sued their lawyer for malpractice because just the quadros are this unique, weird planet where, like, just the word and or something innocent that sounds normal, like marital portion, can totally, I mean, I've had cases where someone got $1 million less than they were supposed to because it said marital portion instead of, you know, total account or something like that. And so
wow.
lawyers have gotten really scared over the years. Their liability, divorce lawyers just don't have the regular attention to it and the knowledge. And so many of them still do it. And some people say, oh, it's easy, you know, just fill out a form and get it done. And sometimes that's true, but you don't know which are the ones that are actually more complicated than you realize. And so a lot of divorce lawyers have just decided it's not worth it to them. It's easier for their clients. It's more cost effective for everybody to have somebody who does it regularly.
Sure, sure. And they focus on what they do best.
Exactly.
And then you can focus on what you do best and do the best for the client.
Right. And so they can focus on, you know, being in court, and I can be the pointy-headed person in the back, like with all the details of ERISA and the and stuff like that. And
even
so,
though
yeah.
you're not a detail
no.
technical person.
It did not come easily.
That's so funny. So how do people find you, Emily?
The best way to get to me is by email or by phone. So our phone number is 404-228-0556. And my email address is Emily, E-M-I-L-Y, at kegelmcburney.com. That's K-E-G-E-L McBurney, M-C-B-U-R-N-E-Y.com. And because the quadros fall under federal law, the bulk of my practice is in Georgia, but I do quadros for people around the country. I mean, I'm not licensed to practice in 50 states, but I can certainly prepare the documents and have their local lawyers handle it. So most of my work is in Georgia, but it don't because I'm not going to court, it don't have to be in your jurisdiction in order
sure.
to
wonderful.
Do what I do.
Well, wonderful. And it was so good to hear. And I know there's so much more to that. We'd have to have you back for sure.
Well, it can get really boring.
Maybe we won't have you back.
I said, I'm not really a hit at parties. Like when I say, you know, division of retirement assets in divorce cases, that's a lot of words that make people's eyes glaze over. And so until you need someone to do it, it's really not interesting. But then it becomes really important and fascinating when it's your life and, you know,
sure.
stuff you need to do.
Well, good. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Rich, you in here today?
Yeah, I was just thinking I was going to mention in the roundtable, but I'd put Emily to the other Emily, to our guest Emily, to the challenge tomorrow night at the After Hours Mixer during happy hour. See if you can't. I bet you'd be the life of the party, yeah.
Oh, in groups of lawyers, especially family law attorneys, yeah, I'm very popular because I make people extremely uncomfortable because then I'm saying they every time I give a presentation, people come up to me and say, oh, you made something you said made me think about a file I have or I think I might have screwed it up.
Wow. So once again, not the hit of the party then in that case, yeah.
I'm just unpopular. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and everybody here is invited to the event tomorrow night.
Yeah, that was my attempt to put a plug in later, but yeah.
191 Peachtree, Commerce Club, 5:30. Okay, so we have Nathan Hartman, who's been so joyous this morning and listening to everybody. Thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure, Emily, to be here.
He is a second-generation estate planning attorney, adjunct professor of law at Emory University, and managing attorney of Hartman Private Law and Estate Planning Firm. He has been part of the Atlanta community for over 18 years. Mr. Hartman graduated from Emory University, Candler School of Theology, and the Emory School of Law. He is an elder the Presbyterian Church, PC, USA, has 3-year-old twins and 2 rescue dogs. Wow. His passion is helping families protect the assets they have worked so hard to earn. Wow, you've done a lot. And that was so brief, but covered everything. You did really good on that.
There's 8 hours in the day I don't use, and I'm looking to fill them.
There you go. So we won't have to talk about anything today then. So tell me a little bit about how you got into what you're doing today.
Well, your question actually reminds me of what Emily just said. In second grade, our teacher asked us what we were going to do, and I raised my hand and said I was going to be an attorney. And I'm still friends with all of those classmates, and we all became what we said we would on that day. And I said I would be an attorney.
Wow. That's a first.
It was. But I did come kicking and screaming. I did not want to practice the same law that my father did and that I was dragged to the office every weekend to do. And now I'm in the office looking at my desk, which looks just like his office.
That sounds familiar. Yeah. I won't put it.
If Herb's listening, yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't kicking and screaming too bad, though.
Yeah. Just screaming.
So let's So let's get into exactly what you do. Tell me a little bit about the difference between a will and a trust. Like, so first of all, why don't I want just a will?
Well, a will for starters is a public document. So it's searchable by last name in any county. a creditor, a disgruntled mother-in-law, you know, a wife you never had, they can all look up these documents and come and make a potentially fraudulent claim. If you speak to someone at the court, they might say that it takes 6 weeks to do probate. But I've been practicing for several years now, and the average time is 6 months to a year. So one of the benefits of a trust is that the assets are immediately available to the beneficiaries upon the death of the person. So at a time of grief and a time of great need, you don't want to be going down to the courthouse and filing an emergency motion for access to an account. Instead, you want to be able to trust a financial professional to work with that you work with, or take your death certificate and go to the bank, and you have access that same day.
Right, right. So it kind of protects.
Absolutely. It also can do more than we had imagined it could. So for instance, oftentimes I might have a single person that comes to the office and they want to leave their money to a sister or a brother, but they also have a great charitable interest. Well, with a trust, what we can do is we can have it benefit their family member or family members for their life, and then the remainder go to their charitable passion. So it's an instrument which allows us to do more than we had imagined we could with what we've earned.
Right, and way more than a will.
Exactly.
To do. Tell me, what problems can arise with co-executors or trustees?
I'm convinced that these were done in the 70s and 80s in order to provide work for the next generation of litigators. It almost always devolves into disagreements between the parties. And whenever there is a disagreement between co-executors, the process stops. And they each find an attorney. The attorney that originally drafted the documents can no longer represent them. And they learn that they can't use the funds from the estate to support their disagreement. So they're no longer friends. They're eventually no longer co-executors or co-trustees. There's better ways to structure the documents and the relationships between the parties.
Sure. And you would do that by starting ahead of time and preparing the stuff before those things happen.
Absolutely. If you look at your documents or your parents' documents and you notice that there's co-trustees, it's definitely worth talking to an estate planning professional who handles these issues daily, and talk to them about updating them or making a change.
So I'm sure, do you work with people also going through a divorce? We're kind of on the flow here with what Emily was doing, and our show loves divorces apparently, but I don't, honey. Don't get upset. Right,
exactly. Yeah. If Kevin's listening, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quick interjection, Rich Kasten over here. Nathan, what about how often should you update your documents, or what's a trigger point or a benchmark or indicator?
2 to 5 years. I don't charge additional for small changes like beneficiary changes or changes to an executor or trustee. That's an extra service that I like to offer my clients. Anytime there is a major life change, so anytime that there is a divorce, anytime that there is a child born, anytime children go off to college, anytime a parent dies, those are all times which we should update our documents.
Or if they adopt a pet, right? A lot of people, they allocate certain portion of their assets to their
adopted. We do now, and Georgia now recognizes bequests to animals. So I don't personally recommend putting it in your trust or will documents. What we do is we have a precatory letter, which is a non-legally binding letter that we draft, and we make all the parties aware of the intentions of the person that they want this pet to be cared for.
And then another point might be is, like you said, if they get passionate about a foundation organization, they probably then want to figure out, maybe we want to allocate something to go towards that foundation. Or
absolutely. And we live in such a beautiful, thriving city, but I can't reveal any names or numbers, but so many families have left bequests to make our city even more wonderful.
Right. So what do you like best about your job?
I love surprising people. helping them do things that they didn't know that were possible, helping them to feel more safe and secure about their future, and having a broader, stronger network of support.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure you probably work with financial planners a lot. Other professions that you work with as well?
I do. I'm conservative with my recommendations for insurance, but I do work with good ones. I'm conservative with my recommendations for financial planners, but I do work with good ones. I enjoy being a resource for clients on potential connections in that other professions.
Wonderful. So if you, like, basically the financial planner is there to set up the document, what exactly is it that you do as opposed to what the financial planner does, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, one of the ways that I talk with financial planners frequently.
How do y'all work together?
Right. We work together. It's wonderful to have a financial planner in the room after the documents have been signed, and we can talk about what the larger plan is. Mm-hmm. And if I notice that their document or their account isn't held in their trust, then it's a good time to talk with a financial planner.
Is it fair to ask what might someone expect to pay as far as cost range or how are they're not standard fees or?
I don't charge a flat fee. Okay. The difference between each family that comes into my office is striking. I charge an hourly rate. It's $250, and at the end of the meeting, I've never had a client say no to my fee. So I'm very reasonable and.
So it really will vary based on how prepared they are on the front end, right? They get all their ducks
that
in a row.
That does make a difference. That does make a difference.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. If you're paying by the hour, that's simple math. I could even figure that one out. Yeah.
So where are you located?
I'm located on the doorstep of Emory University in Emory Village, 1534 North Decatur Road.
And how do people find you?
On the doorstep, yeah.
On the doorstep. Just,
you don't have an office? You just hang out there on the doorstep? You don't have like a bucket in front of you collecting change, do you?
No.
I'm the unprofessional part of the show, by the way, yeah.
He stirs it up a
little. Yeah. I try to mix things up.
You can reach me at any time, 404-271-5646. And I do work on weekends just like my dad.
But you're not kicking and screaming anymore.
No, yeah. I'm really happy.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for being here today. And just to remind our listeners, you are listening to Atlanta Legal Experts Radio, and you can find all of our guests here today on the website at atlantalegalexperts.com. And our show has been brought to you by Peachtree Offices, helping attorneys work virtually anywhere, and by 3A Law Practice Management, where they help lawyers start and build their practice, and also by Atlanta's own John Marshall Law School. And I welcome Deborah Donaldson Scott next. Good morning with Vining Financial Services.
Good morning, Emily.
Thanks
when
so
I was
much
a child, I wanted to be a crop duster, so I'm totally blasting through what you guys are talking about. But I turned out to have a journalism major, and my dad died when I was in the ninth grade. Oh. So from a consumer standpoint, early on, I was introduced to the need for financial planning. Mm-hmm. And with a journalism degree in the early 80s, I became a paralegal. So, because I could type really fast and I had a degree, so a firm gave me the opportunity and I did commercial real estate, I did litigation, and I worked some with tax and estate planners. So I have kind of a dangerous variety, but because of that litigation experience, I was a paralegal for 17 years and I was engaged, and someone came to our small firm to talk about our 401k plan. And I discovered I had really done everything wrong.
Wow.
And I chased him around and asked questions, and he recruited me into his firm.
Oh,
so I changed careers 15 years ago.
Wow. So you've been doing it for 15 years?
Yes. And I've been independent for 4 years.
Okay. And you've got the legal background as
Absolutely.
Well.
And that is why I'm here today, because I do understand in a general degree, and I agree with Emily that you need to be an expert to truly serve your clients best. And the sooner you're in before negotiations are finalized, the more effective you can be and save time and money for your clients.
Absolutely.
So divorce attorneys and I worked very well together, and the Quadro situation, you could not be more correct in describing ERISA as, well, you didn't describe it as a bear, but I will. And with estate planning, titling is incredibly important. Because my family, my dad was a farmer, and that was, on paper, there are all these assets, but cash flow, it's critical how things are conveyed and how things are titled. So, and without a credit history, my mother had, she was a homemaker. So, so the whole estate planning, I know firsthand how important that is and how compatible all of your advisors need to be with each other to give effective advice.
That's fantastic. You really lived it. And so that's where you are today. I love to hear that.
Well, and I can offer compassion to clients. Mm-hmm. And I had to throw my first husband back, too. So I've never filed bankruptcy. But other than that, I've kind of been through it all myself. So
there's
I can
a catch
relate.
And release policy you had there. Yeah, right. You threw him
yes,
back.
Exactly. You know,
back into the big fish pond. Yeah,
exactly. So
So tell me a little bit more about what you do. In windfall situations such as awards from lawsuits, what do you do with the money?
Well, the attorneys that I knew socially from being a litigation paralegal so many years, because I worked for an insurance company that will remain unnamed to protect the innocent. but for 9 years I was there, and I had a lot of relationships with opposing counsel and co-counsel, and those guys now, because of my expertise, have given me a lot of structured settlement business, particularly in minor settlements, because the probate court also requires that anybody who's a custodian act as a fiduciary on behalf of their minor clients. So
gotcha.
That's how I entered structured settlements. But actually, guys, did you know fees can be structured? So if you won a gigantic case and you didn't want to take the income yourself, there are ways to defer it.
Wonderful,
so,
yeah.
So anyway, that's turned into an area that I did not anticipate kind of being unique in.
That's awesome. Kind of fell into that too.
Yeah.
Using your life once again. So is your strategy different with an inheritance than the norm?
Well, in a lawsuit, frequently there's surgery or therapy or some immediate need that we have to account for immediate needs and some long-range planning. And with inheritance planning, frequently the person who bequeathed the asset, mm-hmm. I try to understand what their desire was, because I karma is everywhere. I don't want the undead to be unhappy. So I always try to make sure that that person honors the legacy if possible.
Gotcha.
And people most of the time do desire to continue what the original owner of the asset had in mind. So there's a more of a long-term strategy and more of an overview rather than immediate needs with inheritance.
Fantastic. So you also work with divorcing clients. Why do you just like enemy?
Emily. Divorce, enemy, it kind of goes
I've really
together.
Covered my bases here.
I mean, she's not a hit at the party, but that's just ridiculous. I mean, that's pushing.
Yeah, no name calling.
Sorry, just like Emily.
Make a mental note, Tom, edit that part of the show, yeah.
I know it's a tough name for you, Emily.
Because it's easier to do things right the first time rather than undo and
sure.
untangle a big mess.
Absolutely.
So, and so often there are tax consequences that wind up being a problem that people had no idea because they didn't investigate first before they signed documents and created records that have to be redone.
That's kind of the theme here, not the enemy theme, but the the theme of, you know, just preparing yourself and doing things sooner than later. And I'm sure all of you guys can agree. We talked about it in the workers' comp, you know, just to have everything prepared and to get started early. And does anybody do that?
Well, people don't even open the envelope and read their documents. So right. Hardly anyone does that. So.
So how does, why is being an independent financial planner advantage to your clients and referral partners?
Because I'm independent, I don't have a quota, so I'm not under pressure to sell things to somebody that may not be in their best interest. Mm. I am a fiduciary for my clients, and they benefit because I have, 22 different insurance companies that I'm appointed with, and whatever their situation is, I can either give them an overview and develop a plan if that's all they need, or if mm-hmm. they do need products, I can satisfy those products.
Gotcha.
Rich Castle, over here real quick. We talked about workman's comp earlier. What about disability insurance? Where does that come into play?
Disability is the critical gap that most people have wide open that isn't filled, and that goes for attorneys. Attorneys in general are terrible business people. You're great at what you do, but you focus on your one expertise and you drop the ball too with regards to yourself because you think you're never going to be T-boned or you're never going to have chemo or anything that might affect you. Often I'll see buy-sell agreements that address having life insurance, but they neglect disability. And so many people, you've probably heard of people that had to buy out their partners because they were unable to work because of chemo treatments or a traumatic head injury from an accident or situations like that. That's a huge gap. And yeah. Your greatest asset isn't your house and it isn't your business. It's your ability to bring in income.
Income, yeah.
Yeah.
What about estate planning versus financial planning? I mean,
well, they're compatible. Okay. They're not enemies.
Okay.
Or frenemies.
Frenemies, yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
We're not trying to make enemies here. Yeah.
But I don't do wills. That would be the unauthorized practice of law. I don't do trust. I fund them. I help title them properly. I transfer the assets. But I don't do the critical legal work. So
the main product offering in your wheelhouse is?
Planning.
Okay.
I do comprehensive financial planning.
Okay.
And you work with business owners as well?
I do. Small business is my thing from paralegal days. And I had a stint working at Wachovia and before Wells Fargo took over, and I was a small business banker there.
Oh, wonderful. Wow, just a range of knowledge.
I know, professionals. So how would folks find out about you and your services?
You can find me at viningfinancialservices.com and look under team members because Karen Vining is the principal of our firm.
Oh, really?
I have not misspelled Vinings. We are in East Cobb and the edge of Sandy Springs. And our office number is 770-971-9141. And my email is probably the best way to find me because I could be almost anywhere.
Yep.
Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at viningfinancial.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. And I think you should have your own radio show.
I do too, Emily.
Yeah, sounds good to me. We can make that happen. Yeah. Brian, yes or yes? Yeah.
Wonderful. And we have one person that's been sitting here very quietly and patiently. So thank you for being here as well. Good morning, Michael Mobis.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. I did that right, didn't I?
You did. Yeah, that's rare.
Michael, it's correct?
Right.
So we're going to read just a little bit of his bio here. He began his professional career as a client representative with IBM before resigning to attend law school at Georgia State University in Atlanta. I'm still at the beach. That's what
yeah,
it is.
I know you are, yeah.
Alabama.
Very similar, Atlanta and Alabama.
Yeah. Let me start that over again, and we'll cut that part out. Right. Michael Mobis began his professional career as a client representative with IBM before resigning to attend law school at Georgia State University in Atlanta. He spent 3 years representing employers and insurers at the insurance defense law firm of Drew, Eckel, and Farnham in Midtown Atlanta before joining the legal team at Liberty Mutual Insurance Company for 2 years. These 5 years taught him how insurers evaluate injury claims in terms of validity and financial exposure, in addition to teaching him about the nuances of practicing injury law throughout the great state of Georgia. In 2009, Mr. Mobies started Mobies Law, LLC, and has passionately represented the injured ever since. In fact, he has recovered millions of dollars and won the right to countless medical procedures in the course of his representation of injured workers and veterans since starting his law firm. He is active in the National Organization for Veterans Advocates, the Workers' Injury Law and Advocacy Group, and numerous local and national bar organizations. And this is very interesting. When not practicing law, Lieutenant Colonel Mobies serves as a Medical Service Corps officer with the U.S. Air Force Reserves. He has deployed 3 times in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom, twice to Balad Air Base, Iraq, and once to Andrews AFB, Maryland. In the course of his decorated military service, he has facilitated the aeromedical evacuation of thousands of wounded warriors, and he participated in the Jessica Lynch rescue mission in 2003.
Wow. Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for your service. Outstanding. Yes.
I had to say that. I couldn't read the whole bio, which is wonderful, but I had to definitely include that. And obviously, that's something you pride yourself in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how you got to where you are today.
Okay. Similar to what some of the other guests have said, I didn't necessarily envision myself exactly where I am today when I was a little kid. I did want to go into business for myself, and I had a business undergrad, actually with a specialty in healthcare management, and then Air Force paid for all my schools, so I went in the Guard and Reserve, and you talked about my being a Medical Service Corps officer, and then worked at IBM doing sales to hospitals for a while, and then decided to go back to law school. And then when I got in law school, I enjoyed litigation and evidence classes and decided I wanted to be a litigator. Which is not what I intended to do when I started. I thought I wanted to run a hospital and, you know, basically have a law degree to kind of climb some corporate rungs more quickly. But, and then, you know, got a job, I guess, after clerking at Drew Eccle and then opening the workers' comp section. Thought I'd do that a couple years to kind of learn how to take depositions really well. And then, you know, over a decade later, I'm still doing it. So I've liked it.
So again, kind of like Deborah, you're using your life experience to do what you love today, and now it's like a passion.
Right. Yeah, that's very true.
So tell me, what are the most frequently asked questions you get as a workers' comp attorney in Atlanta?
One of the other guests said that a lot of people ask about, you know, how much they're going to get for the pain and suffering, because when people are hurt, they feel like they should be compensated for that, and they probably should be, but in workers' comp, it's a bit of a give and take in that it's no fault, so you don't have to prove who caused this injury that's making somebody miserable. But the take part of that is that they don't get pain and suffering and workers' compensation, so I have to be the bearer of bad news in that regard. I'm also asked a lot, you know, is my weekly check going to be taxable, or is my settlement going to be taxable, or when am I getting a 1099? And the answer to those questions is never, which is good. So it makes an easier sell when I tell people, well, my contingency fee is 25%, but you're not giving Uncle Sam anything, so you're probably used to having at least a fourth taken out of your check anyway, or your, you know, any lump sum of money you get. So anyway, the non-taxable part usually makes people happier when I tell them there's no pain and suffering.
So how is Georgia different from other states as far as the workers' comp laws?
Every state is a little different, and every state is pretty similar. I only practice in Georgia, but because I'm, like you said earlier, active with some national organizations, I've learned some states have jury trials for workers' compensation, whereas here we have bench trials, meaning just an administrative law judge. Mm-hmm. I don't think any state has pain and suffering in their workers' comp act, but there are other nuances, like if a doctor says they're as well as they're ever going to get or at maximum medical improvement, then they're benefits can stop, whether that's medical or the financial disability part. In Georgia, that's not true, which is good, because you know, I have a mediation next week where a lady has been able to work, but her medical is projected to be $1 million for the rest of her life. So it's nice that when she was placed at MMI, maximum medical improvement, her case didn't stop, because she's going to need a lot of it for the rest of her life if we don't settle next week.
Gotcha. So we probably know this, but why did you add VA disability in your practice last year?
Well, it's funny. Yeah, I'd done workers' comp for over a decade, and I'd met with an outside consultant who suggested it, and I wasn't even really that familiar with the practice area, but he just said, look, with your background, you've deployed, and I'm a third-generation veteran, as far as I know, maybe further back than that, but my granddad went to Korea, my dad went to Vietnam, and of course I went to Iraq. So I have a heart for, you know, military veterans, of course, I think most of us do, and an ability to sort of identify with them firsthand, because I worked in a hospital in Iraq, so I saw every day people who were hurt, and being cared for by the doctors and nurses that I managed as a medical service corps officer. So, and it's similar to workers' comp in that you're trying to, you know, convince a tribunal or a neutral that, you know, someone has not only got some kind of ailment that's disabling them, but that it was related to what they did,
sure,
whether it's at work in the comp practice or, you know, in their service in the military, mm-hmm, practice. So it's relatively similar, but it requires a lot more patience because VA is such a huge,
mm-hmm, I was gonna ask you
organization.
That.
Yeah, everything takes a lot longer than I'm used to. So that part's been a little frustrating. It's requiring more patience than I tend to have. But.
Sure. I'm sure you've learned a lot from that, and you have to learn the different laws and how they get covered and what they can, you know, get and what they can't get and all that. Can you explain just a little bit?
Sure.
A little summary of that?
On the veterans end or the,
yes,
workers' comp
the
end? Thing. Sure. Similar to workers' comp, you have to prove a causal nexus for whatever is wrong with them, whether it's like PTSD is one I see all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I can identify with that myself because when I first got back in 03, after being mortared, you know, several nights in a row, you know, if someone closed a door or came out, like I would jump and, you know, people thought that was funny, but it wasn't all that funny really. Certainly 4th of July was interesting for a year or two when I got back, but,
wow.
But I never, you know, had the severe symptoms, but I get, sure, it because of the sort of the small scale stuff I saw. But you know, mainly you just have to prove that they served, whether that's, mm-hmm, a DD form 214, which is sort of the document you get when you, finish serving in the military. And then, you know, medical records, which is very similar to workers' compensation. But the problem can be, like workers' comp, if the VA is choosing a, you know, one of their doctors, sort of air quotes their doctors, to evaluate you, then they're less likely to find the problems that, you know, I think are there and the veteran thinks are there.
Gotcha.
Or relate them causally. And then there's a very complicated like chart / formula for, you know, how much they can get based on what percentage disability they have. But there's,
gotcha,
some ailments, I don't want to talk too long on this, but that have been tied, whether you don't have to prove the causation element from Vietnam. So if you just prove they had boots on the ground in Vietnam, there's so many problems we've found out Agent Orange caused. All they have to show is that they were there.
Gotcha.
Like a couple of those are type 2 diabetes or prostate cancer or some heart issues, heart attack type issues, and they can get benefits. So.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
What misconceptions or challenges did you have moving from the defense to the plaintiff's side?
The first one, I thought that it was easier on this side of the aisle. Second, I thought that they worked less. That may be because a lot of the guys I got to be friends with from the other side seemed like they were playing a lot of golf and all, but of course they had been practicing for decades and built up a firm that, right, could help them. And neither of those proved to be true. But when you do defense work, you're billing by the hour. So, you know, I would work 60, 70 hours a week so that I could try to bill at least 40. And I felt like, well, if I'm not billing, then I must not have to work that hard. And that's not really true, especially when you have your own firm, because I'm the marketing department, I'm the management department, I'm the HR department, et cetera.
Right. But, sounds like he needs to go to the event tomorrow night.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually delivered. Have worked with Alvaro. He's helped me a
good
lot with 3A management, yeah,
fantastic,
on hiring decisions and IT decisions. So
where do you identify or how do clients, you know, come to find out about your services, not just your contact, but I mean, you know, how do you find new clients, I guess, or?
I think like a lot of us, lawyer referrals are big. For me, I'm all over the, I know you asked at the end how people find you, but a lot of people find me online.
Okay. I mean,
the first 7 pages of Google are about me or something I've written. So when you look for Michael Mobies or Google Atlanta Works Comp Lawyers, stuff, right, like that. So a fair amount will find me through that. I have a blog that I've kept up for 6 years that got an award from LexisNexis, one of the top 25 blogs in the country on workplace issues. So people find me through that.
That's a lot of work. The blog, how often do you do that? Where do you find your content or what's your secret?
It's
without giving away too many tips or pointers. But.
It's funny. Well, my first year when I had hardly any business and a lot of time,
right,
I was good,
right,
about writing every day.
Yeah.
And it sort of ebbed and flowed. But mainly in terms of content, I just take questions people ask me all the time, potential clients or on a website like avvo.com. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll see questions that people are asking and I'll just answer it,
oh, okay,
in a post. And that's pretty easy to do. And I try to, you know, write several times a month, ideally a couple times a week, but right. that doesn't always happen.
Exactly, yeah.
So it sounds like you're doing really, Alvaro is actually doing a good job. Kudos to him, because I mean, a lot of the attorneys that I talk to say they completely get all of their clients from referrals from either their clients or from other attorneys. So it sounds like Alvaro is really doing a good job, because you said a lot of your new clients come from your website, and that's great. That's awesome. Well, we're close to the end, so if you'll tell our listeners how they can reach you.
Sure. Like I said, I'm all over the web. On Twitter, I'm at Mobes, my last name, which is M-O-E-B-E-S. Email is mm@molaw.com. After trying to spell my name out loud for years and realizing that didn't work very well, I just changed my website to molaw.com instead of Mobes Law. It's easier, M-O-E-L-A-W. But phone number is 404-354-5432. And my office is next door to the State Board of Workers' Compensation, which is convenient for clients, too.
Wonderful. Yeah.
So not on the doorsteps of the...
yeah, I loiter all day and hand out business cards.
Sorry, buddy.
Sorry.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening today. This has been another show of Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. I am your host, Emily Rowell, with Peachtree Offices, and I'm so glad to have everybody here today and look forward to another episode next week.